because of the timeframe. I'm sure there are other people that would like to offer their input into the bills, and I'd be happy to answer any question or...
What I think the best thing to do, Chuck, is take your amendments, and Sue Hannah, Legislative Counsel, said that she would work on the amendments, and some are not compatible with the bill or with each other. And she would sort them out and get you people in a room and discuss the amendments and hopefully come up with a consensus as to what you want to do. That doesn't mean that we'll end up with one bill after you meet with Sue, but you'll probably be closer together than you are now.
Mr. Chairman, I don't foresee that there's things that are that critical that we can't work something out or just say we'll back off of this if we try and work something out in the future. We're more than willing to do that.
Dennis?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Dennis Fons, Multnomah County Surveyor. I agree with Chuck's testimony in describing this bill and also concur that we need some study time to come up with amendments that are satisfactory to the planning people and the county surveyors and engineers. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I suspect I'm going to have lots of questions, but I'd just as soon wait until they come back with whatever they come back with.
I think that would be a good idea, that we wait until we see the bill in its final form or near its final form, and then we'll hold another hearing on it. I know Genoa has some amendments that she wants to make, and I'm sure there are other people.
The Dash One Amendment, the Genoa Amendment?
No. Mr. Chair, if I might, the Dash One Amendments are the amendments that came to us on Friday from the Surveyor and Engineers Association. We have two other sets of amendments, one that have come from the real estate agency, and the others come from the Oregon Title Insurance Company. And now I understand there's a fourth set of amendments. We were just notified about an hour and a half ago that these, by Legislative Council, when we received the amendments, that some of them were not compatible, and some were, to quote Sue Hannah, not valid at all. So we didn't have an opportunity at that point in time to cancel the hearing for today, but Sue did advise that we get everybody in a room to sort the amendments out.
And I assume that we can have John there to work with you folks on the bill.
Only if he brings the lemonade.
No. All right. Anyone else care to testify on the bill? I know I have a lot of people signed up, but after I made my statement there, I wonder if it's necessary if anyone wants to testify at this time. If they do, come forward.
My name is Bert Mason. I'm a retired private surveyor. I have just one little comment to make on Section 10, Paragraph 2. I've been pleading with people for over 30 years to try to get something similar to this particular amendment enacted, and so far apparently without success. The existing law calls for a survey of such accuracy that the linear area of closure shall not exceed 1 foot in 10,000. That is probably one of the most meaningless statements that's ever been included in a law relating to land surveying. That statement assumes that the surveyor goes around and occupies successively every corner of a piece of property, and he calculates his traverse through all these points, and he comes up with a traverse closure that where the error does not exceed 1 foot in 10,000 feet. The problem with that is that in modern times, the surveyor virtually never actually occupies every corner of the subject property as a part of his traverse. Very frequently it's impossible because of proximity to buildings or fence corners or trees or something of that kind. The surveyor runs what is known as a random traverse. He sets points near these various corners of the parent property, and then he ties these corners into his traverse, and then he goes through what we call an inverse position computation to determine the distance and bearing between these true corner points. And then when he writes his final description, and when he draws up the linear description around the periphery of the property, he uses these inverse bearings and distances between the true corners of the property. And with a modern calculator, if he doesn't come up with a perfect closure, there's something terribly wrong. So the this business of a 1 in 10,000 linear closure is totally meaningless. And I want to approve that this amendment, that the survey be done with reference to Federal Geodetic Control Committee guidelines of the third order class, certainly should be a part of this bill when it's amended.
Okay, any questions? Thank you. I always think of the survey line between California and Oregon. They're still arguing over it. I don't know who's right or who's wrong, but it's creating a lot of discussion over the years. Anyone else care to be heard?
Honorable Chairman, committee members, my name is Verlin Thomas. I'm the state chairman of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon, and I'm the elected county surveyor from Jackson County. I have, as a county surveyor, I've been involved with Chuck and the rest of the OACES members in trying to amend some of the problems we have with Chapter 92, and I'm particularly interested in Section 8, Section 11, Subsection 8, which is on page 8, regarding the adjusted property lines be monumented. Shortly after taking office as county surveyor, I received a letter signed by all of the title companies in Jackson County requesting this very thing, that lot line adjustments be monumented, or property line adjustments be monumented. Jackson County, I wrote an ordinance for Jackson County, and we have enacted it as an ordinance in Jackson County. And I think this is something that is really needed in this bill to preclude the homebrew measurements being taken to the title company, a lot line adjustment being prepared, a description being prepared from that. And a few years later, someone surveys that adjusted property line of record and wonders why it goes through a garage or separates the man's bedroom from his kitchen. And investigation will indicate that, well, when they homebrew measured, they measured from a fence, and that fence is actually on the other side of an easement, or they measured from a pin they found, and it was a PC of a curve, had nothing to do with their property. This bill would preclude this type of perpetuation of property line disputes. If it is surveyed and monumented and the description is prepared by a surveyor, and the title companies did not want to prepare these descriptions, then I think this is something that's really needed, and I'm glad to see it included in this Senate bill. I'm also glad to see the requirement for exceptionally large parcels be removed from having to be shown on the plat. In Jackson County, I don't think anybody owns that much land, but it has been a problem in eastern Oregon and a couple places on the coast. As Chuck pointed out, how do you show a one-acre parcel and 137,000-acre parcel on an 18 by 24 sheet of paper? And it just, it's something that wasn't foreseen when the first statute was written, and this is a fine-tuning job on the 89 legislation, and I would hope that these corrections bear fruit. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Anyone else? Then I would suggest that you folks contact our office, 88333.
Actually, I will contact them, Mr. Chair.
All right. John will contact you, and we'll meet with Sue Hanna and get the bill underway. We'll go to our next bill. I'll close the hearing on that bill. Go to our next bill, Senate Bill 652. And again, we have a lot of people signed up. If you can come up together, that would help. So anyway, who wants to be first?
At the risk of wearing out my welcome, my name is still Verlin Thomas. I'm state chairman of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon and the elected county surveyor from Jackson County. Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon are requesting a minor revision to ORS Chapter 12.135 relating to construction liens. Briefly stated, the PLSO requests that land surveys be specifically recognized as an improvement to property, and that any action on the performance of a land survey where no construction or alteration or repair is apparent be commenced with...
You're on the wrong bill.
No, I'm not. Be commenced within 10 years of the recording or filing of the survey. Professional surveyors performing surveys in connection with construction, alteration, or repair, along with architects, engineers, and planners, are adequately covered by a 10-year statute of limitations. But if no construction is apparent, the surveyor's contribution to the improvement of the property is not recognized. This lack of recognition has the effect of extending the surveyor's liability for life. I can personally relate to this inequity. During my 25 years as a self-employed land surveyor, I have probably done at least 1,000 surveys. In 1988, I sold my equipment, my business, my survey records to another surveyor. Among these records is a survey performed in 1983, which included a rather controversial location for a railroad right-of-way. I prepared a lengthy and detailed report regarding the right-of-way location, concluding with a recommendation that the client exercise extreme caution in developing the area in question, that the right-of-way line might be challenged by the railroad in the future. The client elected to develop the property, including the controversial strip. I requested he direct me in writing to monument the right-of-way line accordingly, and this he did. This letter, my report, and the substantiating research data are now in the possession of the surveyor who purchased my business. What happens in this situation if this is challenged by a court action 20 years after completion of the survey? The surveyor who purchased my business may have gone out of business, died, had a fire, or moved out of the area. Without this letter of instructions from my client, the written report, the research records used, how do I prepare a defense for decisions made in 1983? This particular example is not unique among surveyors. All self-employed surveyors are faced with potential situation. How to prepare a defense for an alleged error in judgment or commission 20, 30, or 40 years after completing the survey. The surveyor may be compelled to carry errors and omission insurance until he dies. Premiums may range from $200 to $500 a month and carry a deductible of several thousand dollars. Surveyors should not be held responsible for alleged errors until death, and I feel that passage of Senate Bill 652 will remove this inequity.
The limitation is 10 years.
Correct.
Okay.
My name is Tim Fossbender. I'm last year's chairman of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon. I'm here to support 652 and agree with what Verlin just spoke on. We've worked very hard as surveyors to become professional, and we're responsible for doing things right. But not passing 652 is not right. Is there any questions on what Verlin or I...
Questions? Senator Gretzky?
Gentlemen, you'll probably recall the day you came by my office with this bill. I'm going to ask you now to explain to me how it is that you shouldn't be held accountable if someone doesn't discover the error. Let's assume that there was one. I'm not talking about a case where we're talking about a frivolous lawsuit, but let's say there's a legitimate mistake is made in a survey. I find out, let's take an adverse possession case, takes 10 years for adverse possession. 10 years in a day, my next door neighbor files a lawsuit for adverse possession on me. I'm hiring a lawyer now to defend this thing. I come across this deal here and I find out, what do you know? The 10 years has expired. My next door neighbor had to wait 10 years before he could even file the adverse possession suit. And you're going to hold up your hands and say, well, I sold my business, so it's not my problem anymore. Now explain to me why you should be able to walk away under that situation, because that can easily happen.
I think that's very possible. But let me ask you this. If you buy a house and in 10 years you decide that there's something wrong with your plumbing, do you go back and try and nail that plumber?
Well,
and this...
No, but there's a reasonableness thing. The situation you describe is the typical one, and no, you don't have 10 years. You might have two or you might have six, depending on whether you're going to sue in tort or contract. If it's in tort, it would run from the date of discovery, however. Now, if my plumbing doesn't leak, or let's say there was something wrong with it, and I didn't discover it for 10 years, then under the law, as a practical matter, I can sue right now. Now, let's take another example everyone's familiar with. Let's say you're a doctor. Let's say you operate on me, and you screw it up. You do it negligently, but I don't discover it for 10 years. Believe it or not, under the law, I could sue you, as long as I did it within 2 years of the date of discovery. The problem I have with this is, the fuse starts running the day you walk away from your survey. It doesn't start from the date I discover the problem. Now, that I could understand. That's the way it is everywhere else. So this thing here... You do your survey, and frankly, I can't think of an area of the law where I would be less likely to discover something in a timely fashion than in a land survey. As a lawyer who has had a number of these types of cases frequently, it is years and years before the people discover there's a problem. Usually, it's when they're selling it to somebody, or maybe they bring in a surveyor, or maybe they're trying to do an easement, and the next-door neighbor doesn't like that the guy, so he starts checking it out, finds out, whoa, what do you know? The guy's been driving over my property all this time, and then he puts the gate up. And so, you know, it's not uncommon for years and years to go by before the people discover there's a problem. And I don't have any problem making somebody accountable and responsible for acting in a reasonable time once they discover it, but this isn't worded that way. And I understand the need to put an end to it somewhere, and I understand that. As a lawyer, I have the same problem. We could get sued 30 years later on the will, but believe it or not, that's exactly what can happen. And that's why when you gave your example of selling your business and then that guy keeping those records, lawyers have to keep their wills for that same exact reason, because if that person dies 30 years after I write a will and I screwed that thing up, I still can get sued, even though I wrote that thing 30 years ago, because no one discovered the problem. And so... I guess I have a problem with giving you something that the rest of the world doesn't have, really.
All right. Engineers, architects, and surveyors are covered under, and planners, are covered under a 10-year statute of limitations if it deals with construction. Anything to do with construction. The only thing that we are after is to include a land survey as an improvement so that it would be covered under the same period of time as anything dealing with construction. Most of the time, when a suit comes up, a alleging an error or a problem in a survey monument, we have found that it wasn't that the point had been set wrong. It's been that in the intervening years, it's been moved. But the surveyor has to try and find his records. He's got to defend himself, whether that suit is valid or not. And anybody can pull up a monument and move it, and we find this all the time. The other thing, of course, that you brought up is that if two people have looked at these monuments for 10 years and never questioned their validity or their location, there are adverse rights to that line which could be exercised. If one individual hasn't had a problem with it in all those years, it can either be settled with an adverse possession suit or a boundary line agreement. And I understand what you're getting at. You feel that we are trying to get out from under a responsibility, and I don't think that's really what we're after. We just don't feel that we should be held liable for every alleged error, which may or may not be an error, until we die, and have to carry errors and omissions insurance, which is rather expensive, until that time.
Well, I'd like to have that too, frankly, but I don't. And the reason being that what I do affects people sometimes until they die, and so I'm expected to keep those wills in a box somewhere and have them there, and that's the way the law is. But I might point out that if it is a mistake, and it isn't the surveyor's mistake, let's say someone moves that pin or I think what you're referring to a little bit was maybe the catch-all lawsuit where everybody kind of gets named, and you're thrown in just because you're the surveyor. Without this, you'll get thrown in. You're going to walk out of that deal. If you didn't do anything wrong, you're going to walk out of it. But I don't want anybody to think for a second that as a landlord, because I can bring this adverse possession claim to straighten up my boundary, that somehow is a good remedy for me, because I've been involved in those things, and they're very expensive and very time-consuming. If the other side contests it, it can cost thousands and thousands of dollars, and everyone I've been in was a result of the surveyor screwing it up. Every single one of them. They went off of a tree somewhere, or they just mismeasured something, and everybody thought the fence line went this certain way. And the fact of the matter is, I think that surveyor should have been responsible. Now, the situations I'm talking about, the people were so gutted when it was over with, they decided not to go after the surveyor. But they had a good cause of action. And if this thing would have been around, I'd had to tell them, well, you can't recover your attorney fees, even though this thing wasn't your fault. And yeah, we got your boundary line straightened out now, but you know, this guy's long gone or whatever. And that's the problem that I have with it. And that's not just an adverse possession claim, it could be anything. Because if I have a survey done and nothing happens during the next 10 years, I'm not going to know that you messed that thing up. Someone messed it up. I'm not going to hire a second surveyor to come in and check your work and say, oh, well, what do you know? You know, it was wrong. If it's my property and nothing changes, I don't sell a parcel and there's no reason to double check it, I'm probably not going to know. And I just think that, this is my own opinion and I'm going to shut up, but I think that that's kind of the cost of doing business in what you're doing, is that you have the potential to be responsible for a long time. And that's the cost of my business too. I don't like it either. If somebody asked me what I did 10 years ago on a will and I had to defend it right now, I'd probably have a hard time. Sometimes I can barely remember the names of the clients from 10 years ago. But I guess that is kind of the responsibility that goes with the territory a little bit. And so I'm not doing this just to editorialize. I really wanted some legitimate reasons, and I think you've done the best you can to explain to me why you think you should have the bill, but I guess I just disagree.
I'd like to maybe just do one more. Surveying is odd in the respect that everybody has a set of records, and they're not all open to the public or to each individual surveyor. Just in the past 10, 15 years, the camaraderie in the surveyor community has come to the point where I can go from one office to another trying to find information. I have an example where we were denied access to a deceased surveyor's records. We could not find all the monuments to the property line that we were trying to survey. So with the best information we had of record that was in the public and what we had and everything else, we surveyed the line. lo and behold, within about 6 years later, that information surfaced from that surveyor and come out to the line that we surveyed was not the same position that the other surveyor had established, because they found data in there that it was not in the public record. Now, somebody comes in and says, well, you made a mistake. We didn't. From the best available information, we made a decision.
You wouldn't lose on a lawsuit then either.
No, but we had to go through all the hassles, all the expense, and everything else based upon information that was not privy to us. Now, this could happen 10 years, 15 years, could happen a year. Now, we all try to work together when something comes up. We say, oh, we didn't have that. We'll make amends. But, hey, if you're building a shopping center and somebody holds something away from you, and then maybe they won't make that building. 15 years later, they build that building based on where you set it, and then next thing somebody comes in, here it goes over the line. I can't afford that kind of a responsibility. Errors and omissions is not cheap. I don't think surveyors make enough money to afford to hang on to the rest of their life. Neither can attorneys.
Remember that all property surveys now are public record and they're filed in the courthouse. And landowners, it's incumbent on landowners, I feel, to get a copy of their survey and take a little look at their corners. And I think in most cases, at least in my case, the properties that I own, I've made pretty sure what I own before I was satisfied and bought it. I guess I just will never subscribe to the idea of being responsible for a suit against something I may have done 30, 40, or 50 years before. I don't have any equipment anymore. I don't have any records. I have absolutely no way of preparing a defense for that survey. And that defense, that allegation, may be completely frivolous.
Then you're not going to lose.
No, but you still have to defend yourself, Ron. That's the problem.
Well, I appreciate that, but let's take the flip side of that deal. I'm a landowner. Should I be told that because you can't come up with your records, I eat it and go into court and spend $5,000, $6,000, $10,000 if it goes to the Court of Appeals to prove it, and you hold up your hands and say, well, 10 years has gone by, it's not my problem? Now, you're not going to tell me that as a layperson, I can take your survey and go out there and verify it. If that were the case, I wouldn't need to hire a surveyor. I mean, you can walk it out, do the best you can, but, you know, it's not that easy, or else we wouldn't have to hire surveyors. I mean, you may be able to verify, but I don't really believe most people can do that. Just a difference of opinion, I guess. But.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience care to be heard on this non-controversial bill?
Fritz Ingram, Douglas County Surveyor. I don't do private surveys, but I have a lot of experience in continuing education, discussing legal responsibilities for land surveyors, putting on workshops and teaching classes in survey law, the surveyor's responsibility within the law, particularly with regard to boundary cases and so forth. I see lots of court cases. I testify before the court as county surveyor or as an expert witness in surveying at times, and I've seen one way or another hundreds of property cases that were settled because of adverse possession or acquiescence or some sort of silent agreement. And whether the survey was performed properly or not usually is not a determining factor if the 10-year statute of limitations, for instance, for adverse possession has expired. Most of the courts will decide the case upon what's been occupied, what should we be preserving out there, where's the fence line. Fence lines, particularly if they've been there a long time, fence lines nearly always become the property lines. And it doesn't matter much to the court where the survey line was supposed to be or where it was put. The first responsibility of property ownership has always been that you defend your rights, and that's why we have such things as adverse possession, that if you don't keep track of where your property is and understand your rights and defend those rights for a period of 10 years, generally you can lose those. You can lose them through adverse possession or other ways. And I have not seen more than a couple of all of these cases where it had anything to do with whether the survey was performed correctly or not. And I don't think the 10-year statute of limitations is unreasonable at all, because it's very much in line with the court's determinations of the landowner's responsibility for knowing where his property line is. And most cases have nothing to do after 10 years. If the situation has existed for 10 years or more, they have nothing to do with being decided based on the survey anyway.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Smith.
If that's the case, why do you need the bill?
The surveyor, when he goes into retirement, has to maintain while he's in retirement, errors and omission insurance is an unreasonable burden on a retiree. Even if he could afford it while he was in practice, he probably can't afford it while he's retired.
Point. I'm not going to belabor it, but on the one.
Did I make mine?
Well, no, I don't think you did. That wasn't what I was talking about.
In the case
where there's engineering architectural work being done in conjunction with the survey, as I said, you're dealing with a totally different situation. People that are used to developing property, it's probably going to be commercial. If it isn't, it's certainly a very expensive project where they're going to know if a mistake is made relatively soon. And I think that's why there's a 10-year statute of limitations on that, because you're expected to know. You're a professional. You're spending a lot of money. You're using a lot of expert services. You're going to know soon, or else you're not going to know at all. But in the other situation, yeah, I know it's open and notorious, and it's serving notice, but you're dealing with people a lot of times who have never had surveys and don't know the first thing about them. The guy that owns a piece of land in a subdivision buys his house and puts it up, or the guy that buys 5 acres and puts up a house or a farm and then puts a fence on it, he's not going to know that you messed that survey up. Now, if you put up a 10-plex or a shopping center, he's probably going to know real fast whether you screwed that survey up, and that's why there's a 10-year statute of limitations on that. That, to me, is a totally different situation. That's what I think. That's why I think there's a difference there.
I'm sorry that the first example, Senator, misled your thinking. If you look under Section 1 of 12135, it just says an improvement to real property, as in single-family dwelling, as in building a driveway beside your already existing house?
I don't think it should apply there either, frankly. I think you lucked out getting 10 years on that. It shouldn't apply to that either. If I'm somebody that builds a house and you've done that line and I'm just a residential property owner, I may not find out on that for more than 10 years, and yet you're covered there. Why, I don't really know. I can see it in the shopping center 8-plex situation, but just because I put a driveway or a house up on my property, I'm not sure that I shouldn't have a cause of action against you if 10 years from now I find out my line is wrong. Just because it's a bare piece of land versus the fact that I put a fence up or a house, let's use that example, I don't really see there's a distinguishing factor there. I understand you've got that, and we're not going to probably challenge that, but I see that there is a difference in my mind.
I'm going to close the hearing on this. We have an amendment offered by Frank Bronner. We'll get that amendment, and then we'll discuss the bill further.
Mr. Chair, when we bring this bill back, I'd like to ask for some more information. It seems to me that what we're hearing from the industry is they're paying outrageous rates for this errors and omissions insurance, and they want their liability limited to 10 years with the hope that that will reduce their rates, even though there's testimony from the surveyors that the courts don't rule against them generally in those cases. So I'd like to know if this is really going to have any impact at all on their insurance.
Okay, we'll try and find out. I'll close the hearing and open the work session on Senate Bill 652. That was Steve's.
No.
Oh, wait.
255.
255.
Yeah. 255.
Mr. Chair, if you recall, this is the fee bill for the Building Codes Agency. It contains a variety of proposals for fee increases. At the first hearing on the bill, the Building Codes Agency did offer an amendment, which is the dash one amendments, which makes a relatively minor change in the bill to provide that civil penalties from the boiler, the Board of Boiler Rules, be placed in a special fund rather than in the general fund, and also add an emergency clause to the bill. Since the initial hearing, we've received additional information from both the Building Codes Agency and the Home Builders Association. If you recall, the Home Builders Association offered testimony through one of their members expressing concern over the nature of the proposed increase for the structural program at the Building Codes Agency. I'll pass out that additional information and then we can begin discussing the bill.
All right.
Where does this go?
The point of this bill was to have inspections cover the cost of the service performed. The Building Codes Agency indicated at this time some of their building fees and all cost didn't cover the full array of services that were offered.
And Mr. Chair, this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, I think.
John?
Yeah.
Does this have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
This is the
yes,
one.
It does.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Chair, can I ask Mr. Wicks where his budget's at, or have you been up to our subcommittee yet, or which subcommittee are you going to be in front of?
Mr. Chair, Gary Wicks, Administrator of the Building Codes Agency. Our budget hearings are on April the 4th and the 5th, and we're before the Public Safety Subcommittee.
Remind me who the chair of that subcommittee is.
The chairman is Representative Jones.
You ready for a motion on the amendments?
Yes.
I'd move the dash one amendments.
Senator Springer moves the dash one amendments to the bill. Any objections? Amendments approved.
Okay. I'd move the bill. Down to Ways and Means do pass, Mr. Chair. I'm confident that the Ways and Means Subcommittee will look at this budget very carefully, and they're more qualified than I am. More qualified than I am, perhaps, to weigh some of the issues here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm going to have to vote no on this thing. I don't feel qualified to say these fee increases are something we need or something we don't need, but the fact is I'm being asked to say yes we do and moving it along the system, and I know that the cost of building has skyrocketed in this state in the last year. I have a lot of acquaintances that are in this industry. They tell me the fees are outrageous, frankly, is what they tell me, and I'm not trying to put an indictment on this agency by any means, but I can't justify raising fees, so I have to vote no on it.
Okay, any other comments? The motion was made to send Senate Bill
255
to Ways and Means as amended with a do pass recommendation. You want to call the roll, please?
Senator Benn? Senator Cease?
Aye.
Senator Grinsky?
No.
Senator Kitzhaber? Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye. Motion carried. And anything else to bring before our committee today? Not. Thank you.
You?
We are adjourned.
Hit him.